Welcome to the fourth edition of the CAME Health Professions Education Podcast. I'm Robert Sternsis, a member at large on the Executive Board of Directors of CAME. This podcast is designed to help clinical teachers apply scholarship in health sciences education to their teaching and is part of several CAME offerings intended to promote health sciences education research, scholarship, and best practices at a national level. For more information about CAME or to become a member, visit www.came-acem.ca. Today, we are fortunate to have Dr. Jerry Karyanjahe as our guest. Dr. Karyanjahe is an adolescent medicine specialist and consultant pediatrician in Nairobi, Kenya. She received an adolescent health and well-being graduate diploma from the University of Melbourne and subsequently completed an adolescent medicine fellowship at the University of Toronto. Her experience coming to Canada from Kenya for fellowship served as a catalyst for the creating of an inspiring podcast called Fellowship Safaris, which explores the stories of medics of color and their subspecialty training experiences. She has also recently published on her fellowship experience in the Journal of Adolescent Health. Dr. Karyanjahe, we are so grateful you have joined us today to share your stories and lessons learned from the many incredible guests that you have interviewed on your podcast, so that we can better help support IMGs and learners coming to Canada from developing countries in their training experiences. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob. I really appreciate it.
So let's jump right in. To begin, can you share with us a little bit about yourself, other than, of course, the introduction I just gave, and the experience of coming to Toronto for fellowship training and the inspiration for your podcast?
Like I said, Rob, this is such an honor and privilege to be part of this conversation. And thank you so much for the invitation to be here. And like you said, from the introduction, I'm all those things and also a mom and a wife and also all-round lover of East Africa and Nairobi, Kenya, where I grew up. And up until about a month ago is when I actually accepted that I'm a podcaster as well and taking on that identity. Actually thinking through what I wanted to do as a subspecialty was more natural to me in terms of working together with adolescents and wanting to improve their health. However, there were no training opportunities in my country, Kenya, and none on the African continent. And so I quite literally Googled adolescent medicine fellowship and landed on the Hospital for Sick Children, where I got an opportunity to be able to do my my fellowship. It was interesting to me because I'd never experienced any of the things that I got to experience. Like, I'd never encountered an observership. I didn't know what that was. And, you know, fast forward into actually starting the fellowship, I had never actually seen an adolescent medicine clinic and how it's run, because with our structures and our health system, we don't quite have adolescent focused clinics in the way that they are run in Canada. And so that fellowship experience was quite transformative for me. And at the same time, because I am the first in East and Central Africa to go through such a training, I have had lots of people asking me, how do you go about, you know, the training experience? How do you apply? What do you anticipate? And this came from so many different quarters, from people who want to go for fellowship and people who also want to support people who are in fellowship. And so for me, it became sort of like a natural progression to want to share this information broadly and have it, as we call it here, on the Internet of Things. And so that tied in with having conversations with my sister and giving her, you know, snippets of my life here in while I was in Toronto, Canada. She was like, I hope you're documenting all the things that are happening to you and around you. And later on, she was like, have you thought about a podcast? So that was one piece of it. The other one was that I had two very inspiration mentors at the University of Toronto, and that's Dr. Karen Leslie and Dr. Hannah Kornblum. And one of the ways that I metabolize the emotions and the feelings and experiences that I was having as a fellow, as a learner, and all my other roles, was writing essays. And so I shared my essays with them and they asked me, do you know about narrative medicine? And, you know, delving into that specialty, I realized that the one way that I could be able to actively practice narrative medicine would be through a podcast. And so it sounded like I was getting the messages from so many different angles, from family and also professionally, to sort of go in this direction. And that's what gave birth to the idea of the Fellowship Safaris podcast. And we started in March of 2023. And hopefully, we hope to be able to still be around for quite some time. So that's the long and short of it.
That's such an interesting and full answer. And what I love to hear in there is, as I think about so many of the things that I want to ask you about, that came up for me in listening to your podcast, you've actually brought in so many of those things into that response. The mentorship, the inspiring people, the being the first to do something in your country, and the opportunity to bring something new back home. And those are all things we will touch on over the course of this podcast. The other thing that really came out for me, which is I find extremely interesting, is as you speak about your inspiration for the podcast, you place the emphasis on wanting to provide material information for those who come after you, for those who are going to follow in your footsteps and do fellowships abroad and in Canada. And while 100% that is a huge benefit and utility for the podcast, the other side of it, which I also see really strongly, is that your podcast also provides educators in Canada, like myself and those listening here, with a much deeper understanding of what it is like to be a fellow coming to Canada from a developing country and the different ways in which we might be able to better support those fellows. And so I really see your podcast as having a dual function, even if you didn't necessarily envision it that way when you first developed it.
Thank you so much. And it's so interesting that you say that, because, you know, the way we intend a product or a service to be going in one direction and it ends up serving more than one purpose. Because initially, I really wanted people to have information that you wouldn't typically get on a university website. Because initially coming in, a lot of the information I had about the university I was going to, about the hospital I was going to, was off the website. Later on, I did get to speak to some people who are enrolled in the fellowship program. But even then, I still did not feel ready enough. And I felt that putting a voice to a lived experience could probably add on some more color or some more meat on the bones, as it were, to be able to help people better be prepared for the experience of fellowship and fellowship in Canada.
And from all of the incredible guests that you've interviewed, and you've interviewed, you know, fellows or recent fellows like yourself, you've interviewed supervisors in the Canadian context, both physicians and non-physicians like social workers. You've interviewed your more senior sort of mentors and supervisors locally in Kenya. So you've interviewed such a range of people. And this is probably a really difficult question, but I'm wondering if there are one or two things that you have learned that really stand out the most for you from having done this podcast.
I absolutely love this question because, like, at the end of the day, that's what people want to be able to have tried to figure out. Like, what did we learn? I have learned that international medical graduates go through a lot of sacrifice to be able to even just get on that plane and come to Canada. The amount of sacrifice that people have taken and their families have taken to be able to do that is immense. And being able to acknowledge it and respond to it has been one of those things that I found really fruitful in having these conversations with them. The other really key, actually, can I add two more? The other is how resilient they are, coming in from different spaces, coming in from different cultural backgrounds and different medical education experiences. A lot of them have been able to adapt to the new environment and be able to get the maximum that they can from the learning experience in Canada. And the last one, but certainly not the least, is the social capital that is required coming into fellowship, and also in terms of interacting within the programs and with other learners and other educators during the course of time that they are learning. So for me, those were the big, big takeaways. And I really salute every person who was courageous enough to share their experience and story with me, because that then has given a few more people courage to be able to reach for their dreams and go out and do a fellowship.
You know, in that response, again, you alluded both to the hardship, the sacrifice, the challenge, but also to the tremendous resiliency. And I want to touch and pick up on both of those things, because mm-hmm. they both come out really strongly in the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so if we start with the challenge, something, you know, that comes up over and over again, is this notion or this idea that much of the time fellows coming to Canada from developing countries are asking a tremendous sacrifice of their families, putting a tremendous strain on their personal lives, but also have this balanced with this opportunity to make such an incredible impact in their home country, whether that be bringing adolescent medicine to Kenya or being the first pediatric endocrinologist in a region. And so there's this tension between giving up so much personally, but yet being able to have such a tremendous civic and professional impact. And I'm wondering how that tension you feel plays into how learners coming to Canada from developing countries learn, how it impacts their well-being, and how we as Canadian faculty might be able to better acknowledge and support this important reality.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting and really important question, I believe. I'll speak from experience. On the one hand, that particular tension in my family experience was huge. I'll give a personal example. My daughter always knew that I was either at work or sleeping on the couch. Like, that was her context of me for 2.5 years. And the mom guilt was extremely heavy. However, one of the things that my husband consistently reminded me was that we're here for a purpose, and it is for the benefit of not just you and for us as a family, but for our country. And so it's tough right now. It's not going to last always, and we're going to be able to reap the fruit of it later, but you've just got to hang in there. So that was one aspect of it. The other one is that it made the sacrifice, it made that working hard and that interaction and gaining that knowledge and expertise all the more worthwhile, because we knew what we were sacrificing. For me, you know, coming in with my family, but barely being able to see them because of the, you know, just the amount of workload that we had, versus I have colleagues who left their families behind and did not see them for an entire 2 to 2.5 years because they were pursuing their fellowship programs and could not afford to travel to and from home. And so just having that sort of like in front of you to sort of keep you focused was one of the things that, you know, off mic, a lot of people shared that kept them in focus so that their sacrifice was worthwhile. I think for a lot of program directors and those who are in areas of authority and leadership need to be mindful that this can have a tremendous strain on the international medical graduate. And for a lot of us, we've been conditioned not to share these strains and stresses. And so being extremely intentional about creating safe spaces for the international medical graduate to talk about what it is that they're experiencing, how they're metabolizing, what sort of structures and supports they have around them, and intentionally seeking them out one-on-one would be, for me in my program, went a long way because a lot of my, the program director would intentionally check in on me, ensure that things were still going on track and whatever I needed to be able to make sure that there were supports in place. However, I cannot speak to that for all other subspecialty fellowships, because everybody, some of my friends and colleagues in different fellowships were going through a different experience that wasn't necessarily always that supportive. And so being able as leadership to consistently provide this check-ins and safe spaces and ensuring that they understand what that's like and being culturally, you know, sensitive and just letting them know that they can be able to approach the leadership to be able to get that support is really, really key and goes a really, really long way.
That's a really, really important insight and reflection. I think we often, thinking about some of the different programs that I've been involved in, we tend in Canada to do a really good job welcoming and orienting. And so at the start of a program, really kind of, you know, acknowledging and bringing people in. But then the year kind of starts and it gets very, very easy to not necessarily continue and circle back and provide mm-hmm. these spaces again and make sure that there's an ongoing sense of belonging. And so I think that's a really, really important message for the listeners. And also to remember, you know, that this, you know, as an example, right, that this bit about the personal sacrifice and the tremendous potential gain for the country as something unique. And while we tend to sort of have this default of, you know, we treat all of our learners the same. In fact, it's also important to recognize the ways in which they are different so that we can mm-hmm. attend to their needs individually, which we don't always do very well.
Thank you for acknowledging that. It actually reminds me of a scenario. So in my fellowship, there was me from Kenya, there was a fellow from Kuwait, from Mexico, from Thailand, from Malaysia, and Canada. And we were all trying to figure out, we had just gotten through one of the lectures, one of the didactic lectures about, I don't remember what it was about. What I do remember is that we all started asking each other, what's this word in your language? Like, how are we going to be able to translate this in a way that is culturally appropriate and sensitive enough to be able to get the message across without having to dilute it? And so what was helpful was we actually had faculty who've done global health, as well as faculty who had connects with different leaders in the different areas that we come from, so as to be able to connect us and say, I may not have that much experience. However, I'd like to connect you with this person. Do you mind having a conversation and just expressing it, you know, expressing your concern just the way you have to them? I'll provide an introduction. And that introduction goes a long way compared to someone just being able to reach out on their own, even as they're being able to transition into practice in their countries of origin. And so as leaders, the power of email, the power of your email, being able to introduce somebody and sort of like just get the door open or even get a window open for them to at least get some communication across goes a long, long way. And even just allowing people to have that conversation and just ask each other, how are we going to navigate this in our countries, is really an important one too.
another really important insight. And, you know, as we alluded to earlier, in addition to hearing about so many of the challenges and struggles and the importance of programs and program directors and leadership supporting those, in your podcast, I also kept hearing story after story that highlighted not struggle and challenge, but incredible strength, determination, motivation, faith, resilience, from so many of your guests. And I'm wondering if you could speak to how Canadian programs might actually be able to better highlight and value the tremendous knowledge and lived experience that fellows coming to Canada from developing countries have, and how we can actually use that and support those fellows in actually informing our own practices here in Canada, because we have a lot to learn.
That's a great question. And let me start by saying that a lot of what I've learned and experienced is based off of different learnings that our leadership had in my fellowship program, as well as being open to new ideas. So one of the things, like you said, the welcoming piece is really excellent, and we do feel welcomed into communities of learning and communities of practice. And one of the ways that that can be carried on is to actually, as people are preparing for transition to practice, one of the things that you need to start having a conversation around is how can we make this better and more meaningful for the next person who might be coming from your part of the world? What were a couple of things that helped you? What were a couple of things that hindered you? And how can we be able to bridge some of the things that come up? Because, you know, again, the lived experience is a valuable one. And just being able to have the person, as they're thinking about, you know, what they've been through, and as they're getting ready to transition out, I find that people feel those people are more settled in the program and have had a better sense of the runnings of and the ins and outs of the programs. So they'd be a helpful resource to be able to help out. And even after they are done with their program, I've seen instances where you end up being connected with other people who are thinking about coming into the program or who are coming into the program, so that even after the completion of fellowship, there's still an ongoing conversation and relationship months after they're done that allows for the person who's left to be able to still be a resource for the department that they left behind, so as to be able to help any other incoming international medical graduate. I found those to be really, really valuable, and to be able to build up on those, as well as continually creating safe spaces. And one of the episodes, I talk about balint groups and building up on those and actually intentionally investing in balint groups as places that the learners can have safe spaces to be able to metabolize what they're being able to go through, as well as have avenues to be able to talk to the leadership if there are areas that can be worked on by the leadership and by the particular division or department.
Yeah, that's great. And for listeners here who might be interested in hearing a little bit more about balint groups, I know you have one of your season 2 podcast episodes on that very topic with a social worker from the University of Toronto, which I'd really encourage people to have a listen to. One of the things that has come up a lot today, and that came up a lot as well in the podcast, was the importance of inspiring mentors to you and to your guests. And I'm wondering, when in thinking about being a mentor for a learner coming to Canada from a developing country or an IMG more broadly, are there specific needs or challenges or approaches that Canadian faculty should be aware of to be able to be more effective mentors?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think for Canadian faculty, when they're thinking about being mentors, one is being culturally sensitive. And it's a nice combination of words and not always as easy in terms of execution because we all come from such different backgrounds. But that openness to be willing to understand the background from which somebody is coming from goes a long way. And understanding that everybody has a unique background really does help a lot. Being mindful of the fact that we may not be as an international medical graduate may not be privy to the nuances of the spaces that we're coming into. And so sometimes I remember I would ask, what does that phrase mean? Or what is implied when this is said this way? And I remember a lot of colleagues and even my teachers just being able to walk me through it, because it made a world of difference when I was thinking about interviews that I'm considering or going into new spaces where that I'm going to be teaching or speaking in. That went a long way in terms of sort of code deciphering, as I'll call it, of the space that your mentee is going to be going into, and being really intentional about just getting to understand what their context is in particular situations, so that even as you're doing the code deciphering, it's an appropriate one as well. That would go a great and a long way. I don't know if that answers the question.
Oh, it absolutely does. And I think, you know, again, many of the people who listen here will find themselves in a situation where mm-hmm. they have the privilege of being a mentor. And so I think these words of advice are extremely helpful.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit before we wrap up the podcast. And I can't really help myself because being new to this podcast world and needed to take advantage of your two seasons worth of vast expertise. And so I'm wondering, you know, in medical education, there is very little that we actually know about the impact or the benefits of podcasting as a strategy, and even less so when it comes to it being a strategy for education in the developing world. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or insights into some challenges or things that maybe would benefit from being explored in this area to help us better use this powerful modality.
Mm-hmm. When I think about this question, this is an ongoing question in my mind from day one when I was doing season one and even now in season two. I think there is definitely room for research and just trying to have a better sense and understanding of the impact podcasting does have on medical education. I know there are certain subspecialties where there's a lot of data and information around. However, we do need to hear more and just get more insights and information around that. The other thing is that podcasting in Africa is one of those modalities that is growing and fast evolving, because one of the things that is notable in Africa is that one of the ways that we have always passed on information from generation to generation is through storytelling. And so podcasting felt very much on brand for African podcasters. However, the challenge is that we have a sustainability challenge. And what I mean by that is that, while we would want to be able to start having these conversations and do storytelling in a meaningful way, we have limits in terms of resources. So in terms of learning skills, in terms of financial resources. And so while someone might want to be able to start a podcast, they're not able to continue in terms of its development and growth because they may not have enough funds to be able to continue with it. They may not have enough expertise in terms of how to be able to market it and get it out there. And, just being able to have the kind of reach that you would want, you know, your storytelling to do. And so for me, it's sort of trust. My big question through my experience of growing into a podcaster has been, how do I use this information to improve how we get medical education to international medical graduates, as well as how do we develop a sustainability model that encourages more learners or international medical graduates to be able to engage with podcasting as a modality to share out information that they may have, learnings that they've gotten during the course of their fellowship. So this is an ongoing question for me and probably a challenge for people who are able to invest in podcasts, especially medical education podcasts on the African continent.
It sounds to me like you've got a whole program of research ahead of you, actually, if you choose to take it.
Oh my gosh. You know what? If I do go down that road, I would be happy to share what I can with you, Rob, and anybody else who's willing to share that with me, because it's a big question. And it's one that I have asked a lot of African podcasters as I am in the process of continuing to learn. Because yes, we do have data, and organizations like Africa Podfest have been trying to gather data on the African continent about what is the information showing us concerning podcasting. However, for me as a medic, and with my interest in terms of medical education and the power of storytelling and its impact, I still don't have enough information to guide decision making, to be able to garner funds, to get more, you know, put into particular podcast spaces. So if anyone has any more additional answers or insights, I would absolutely love to engage in that sort of conversation.
That's fantastic. Thank you for that. And so we're going to move to the last question, and it's become a bit of a tradition on this podcast. I'm going to ask you if you could give a couple of tips to faculty members or program directors about how to best support, promote, and recognize learners coming to train in Canada from developing nations. What would those tips be?
So, three tips that I would give to faculty. One is to be intentional about meaningful engagement with the learner coming into your space. And so it's not just a one-off, it's that continuous be in our faces, talk to us, engage with us in and outside of the hospital, and get to know who we are, because that that context will go a long way in understanding how we respond in the clinical spaces. The other thing I would say is being willing to actually mentor us, not just during the fellowship experience, but beyond. Because for a lot of us, we are coming from spaces that we don't have mentors in that particular subspecialty. Like, I'll speak for myself in adolescent medicine. I don't have a lot of mentors in the African space. However, we're hoping to change that in a little bit. But just being willing to mentor us during the fellowship and even after the fellowship, and continue the conversation and the relationship after the fellowship. The last one I would say is that this one is a big shout out to Dr. Karen Leslie and Dr. Hannah Korenblum. If they hadn't, you know, just mentioned narrative medicine, you know, in a conversation, then I wouldn't have known what it is, and I wouldn't have been in a position to put together storytelling with medical education experiences. And so also being open to introduce new concepts to us and walk with us during during our exploration of it is really something that we would want for you to be able to do for us.
I think those are tremendously helpful words of advice to our listeners, and this interplay between narrative medicine and supporting the well-being and the mentorship of learners, and especially those who come from cultures where storytelling is so prominently featured, I think is a really mind-opening lens that I hadn't really seen until we've had this conversation. So thank you for sharing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to take this opportunity again on behalf of CAME to thank you, Jerry, for joining us today on our CAME podcast series. My hope is that the enlightening discussion that we've just had will help our listeners reflect on and potentially explore in the future new ways of being with, supervising, and mentoring learners coming to Canada from developing countries and IMGs more broadly. This is a critically important topic, and I am so, so grateful that you have shared your lived experience and your expertise with us today. If you, as a listener, want to learn more about this, please, I implore you to take the time to type in Fellowship Safaris to wherever you get your podcasts. You will not be disappointed. And to all of our listeners, we hope you have enjoyed this rich discussion and will join us for upcoming CAME activities, including future podcasts, as well as our webinar series. As a reminder, if you'd like more information on CAME, events, and or to become a member of CAME to benefit from our education content and funding opportunities, check out www.came-acem.ca. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.